Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully and most of the time optimistically. Why optimistically? Well, that is a fair question because there are plenty of things to be worried about in terms of our climate and our environment in general. However, here is why I'm optimistic. We know the cause of climate change, and that cause is human greenhouse gas emissions. And knowing the cause, we know what the solution is. Stop polluting the environment with fossil fuel emissions. So knowing the cause and knowing the solution, I'm optimistic. Imagine being in a situation where we didn't know the cause, or we knew the cause but didn't know the solution. That's not us. And as I point to fossil fuel emissions, I'm talking primarily about carbon dioxide and secondarily about methane. The two of those combined make up the vast bulk of our greenhouse gas emissions. The problem is, of course, that we're in a situation where there are entrenched interests who favor continued pollution because they're either profiting from it or they can't imagine doing anything else. And those interests are powerful in our government, and they are also powerful in influencing public opinion. So much so that even though a very significant majority of our population understands that the climate is changing and that we're causing that with our greenhouse gas emissions, we are unable to take meaningful steps towards addressing climate change. When I say we, I mean both us here in the United States and most other countries around the world. The Paris Accords are a benchmark of sorts, a way of measuring how we're doing. Not much of a benchmark, a standard that even if we meet the goals of the Paris Accord, we're probably going to have a severely damaged environment in the future. And of course, the really bad news is that of the 197 signatories, only a handful are meeting their voluntary commitments. Some are falling short a bit, some are falling short grossly, and the United States is included in that group that are doing a magnificently poor job of meeting their Paris Accord commitments. So the deniers, the detractors, the disinterested, and I can't help saying it, the lazy, are carrying the day in terms of addressing climate change. And we're regularly treated to specific events that call out our failures to act adequately to address climate change. Wildfires this summer raging in Oregon, Washington, California, with each fire season starting earlier than the one before, lasting longer and burning more square miles. Or unprecedented floods in Germany or China, or the ever-receding Arctic ice cap, or the loss of ice mass from our glaciers and other caps. And a vocal minority fueled with fossil fuel money is able to block most political efforts to address climate change. So gloomy, yeah? But that doesn't mean we aren't making progress. The percentage of our population that is alarmed or concerned has increased over the last few years, and the percentage who denies the reality of climate change has shrunk. There is more conversation in the media about climate change. There's more conversation, I believe, in our living rooms and in our dining rooms. Climate change is on our agenda. So, yes, as we work to create a livable world in the future, we are finding our successes along the way. And I think I should state that the struggle is not a binary one, not a struggle where we either win or lose. The struggle is how good a job are we going to do in terms of mitigating climate change into the future and addressing impacts that are showing up already. How bad will they be in the future? No new normal here right now. The new normal is that until we change our practices, things are going to get worse and worse climate-wise. By the future, I mean from now on. Tomorrow, starting tomorrow, our job is to mitigate those impacts the best we can, knowing that right now, future damages are baked into the system. Just how bad are we going to let things be? One bright spot that I can point to is a recent Washington State Supreme Court decision. The decision directly addresses whether a person being prosecuted for protesting in an illegal direct action, that's direct action, quote-unquote, format fossil fuel pollution. A direct action is something like chaining oneself to a fence or a piece of equipment to delay or obstruct construction, blocking a rail shipment or the construction of a pipeline by physical presence or a similar nonviolent means. That's a direct action. And the necessity defense argues that the consequences of what's being protested against, if they are so severe, and that other channels for addressing those severe consequences have been unfruitful, then direct action may be justified. Our country's got a long history of this kind of thing, of taking action in defiance of established law because some higher cause is calling for that action. The American War of Independence, along with the Declaration of Independence, is the foundation of our country. The colonists argued that that action was necessary based on our rights as human beings, the necessity defense. That's at the very foundation of our country. The struggle against slavery saw the same concept play out. In 1850, an act was passed by Congress and signed by the president called the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. This law required that Northerners who lived in states in which slavery was illegal and whose citizens opposed slavery and slave ownership were required by law to assist owners of slaves in the South who had escaped to the North, where it was legal to be free, and that those citizens in the North were required by law to assist the Southern slave owners in recapturing their slaves and getting them back to the plantations in the South. There were numerous instances where authorities refused to act on the laws and juries defied those laws. They defied those laws because they could clearly see that they were unjust, and even though it was a properly constituted law, they defied the law, including juries refusing to convict people who were brought to court for violating the law. And that's a law that was the rule of the land, just as the laws that are being passed now that will prohibit direct action in terms of climate change efforts are the duly constituted laws of the land. We saw the same process play out in the women's suffrage movement, where advocates for the vote for women defied the law and claimed the necessity defense in defying those laws. And more recently, the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s defied existing laws because they were ordering them to defy a higher purpose, the purpose of equality under the law. Those laws that they defied were institutionalized to maintain racial discrimination in every aspect of the societies. And in significant respects, the political process of seeking to address grievances via the duly constituted government channels was inadequate to accomplish the purpose of granting civil rights. Think of actions like sitting at a lunch counter where it's against the law to be black and sit at a lunch counter, riding in the front of a bus rather than the back, a black person riding in the front instead of in the back, or conducting illegal marches expressing opinion regarding racial discrimination. Protesters taking direct action regarding climate change related things have been attempting with some success to use this necessity defense to argue in front of a jury that while their action was illegal, the action was warranted because of the consequences of not taking action. The consequences were profoundly worse than the protest, and because using the, quote, system, unquote, to seek political change just wasn't working. Sound familiar? Anyway, the Washington State Supreme Court has recently ruled that defendants in these kinds of cases are entitled to present their necessity defense to a jury, and that the jury can consider whether the action taken was warranted in the face of the hazards of climate change that were being challenged by the protesters. This is absolutely good news, and I am personally thankful to those individuals who are willing to risk their financial resources and their individual freedoms to make these statements. These statements calling attention to our slow-moving climate change train wreck. One of the reasons it's so important that the protesters be able to call upon this necessity defense is that the fossil fuel industry is sponsoring draconian legislation all around the United States in friendly legislatures. Legislation that is designed to stifle any notion of dissenting in a direct action kind of way against further expansion of the fossil fuel industry. And that way of looking at the world, and really our legal system, supports this way. Industry has a right to extract fossil fuels and pollute the environment, but ordinary citizens do not have a right in these cases to a clean environment and a stable climate free of human influence into the future. So these new laws, these draconian laws, increase penalties for trespass on property with what's termed critical infrastructure, facilities such as pipelines, refineries, and other oil and gas equipment. Someone who materially impedes or inhibits operations of an oil or gas facility can be fined multi-thousands of dollars and jailed for up to 18 months for taking those actions. Clearly, legislation designed to stifle dissent. And those fines can be levied against people who just showed up somewhere where direct action was taking place. Doesn't necessarily mean to have to be somebody who was chained to a fence or blocking pipeline construction. And those who caused damage to critical infrastructures that cost more could face a jail term of up to 30 years. So far, a number of states have passed that kind of bill, making it a crime to trespass even on oil and gas properties, a trespass with up to 6 months in prison or a $1,000 fine. As I noted in the outset, we're living in a system where powerful elements manipulate the legislative and legal system to maintain their rights to pollute while jailing those who actively interfere with their operations, interfere with the goal of calling out the selfish damage they are doing. So, you know, I'm thankful we live in a state where the right to actively protest can at least be defended in court, and I'm sad for states where the necessity defense is illegal, can't be raised before juries. I think there's a subtext here, and that is we are called upon to do what we're able and willing to do to stop polluting the environment and build a livable world into the future. So what do you think? Let me know what you think. I would love to hear from you. You can send me an email at John, J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. I am an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a good outfit. Check it out at cclTacoma.org. Or find some other organization that suits your persona and get active in working to create this better future that we all long to have and that we want to leave for our children and our grandchildren. In the meantime, good talking with you and reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.